Welcome to the flyfisher.co.za podcasts. This is the second time that I'm interviewing somebody that I know quite well. The first time was Tony Kitzman, and we had a great chat. This time I'm sitting here with Mario Feldnas. Welcome to the podcast, Mario.
Thanks a lot, Mike.
Mario, where and how did you get into fly fishing?
Yeah, it's quite interesting. Well, I wasn't really into fishing or fly fishing at all, but I've always been into sports, so I think of myself as a very sporty guy. I was lucky enough to meet and marry a girl from Rhodes.
If you're going to do it, do it that way.
Yeah, you know. I only started fishing after I met her, so people think I married into fishing, or married her for the fishing. But no, I only started fishing a couple of months after I met her. More as an excuse to get away from the farmhouse than anything else. But yeah, I've been fishing for about 12 years now. Like I say, very fortunate to be in the Rhodes area. The farm that they stay on is about 800 metres from the Bell.
Just tell the guys where you live at the moment.
I stay in a little north full time near my wife.
Yeah.
45 minutes from the Cardinal Strait and Lady Grey.
Yeah.
About an hour and a half from the Bell. So.
And you go through the farm every weekend or so?
Before our son was born, we did about 150 days fishing a year. I'm lucky enough to have a half day work or job. And Wednesday afternoons, most guys would go golfing. I'd get in my car at 2 o'clock. 3 o'clock I'd be on the Cardinal Strait, fish till 6. Yeah, and then I'd be back 7 o'clock.
Speaking of that, last one with Tony was about small streams. Let's just carry on in that vein. I mean, the Cundamulk is an absolutely gorgeous piece of water. Tell the guys about it.
It's probably, Mike, the most underrated river in the country. At the moment, it's quite dry. The whole area's suffered quite a lot. But we're on the up cycle now, so next year should be quite good. But Tom Sutcliffe calls this Mulbar the Prince of Streams. But the Cundamulk Sprite's seriously underrated. Yet you see fish size-wise that are stronger than the fish in the Cundamulk. You fish the Cundamulk Strait a few times.
Yeah.
And size-wise, I'd also say on average, probably the biggest fish, river fish, in a small stream that you're going to find. Quality-wise, it's an awesome place to fish. A lot of good water, pockets, riffles, big pools. So, you know, anyone wanting to fish any type and style of fishing, it's there for them, yeah. The big thing about the Cundamulk as well, the Lady Grey farm is formed differently from most other farmers in the area, so they protect their banks very well. So with that gradient, you don't have a lot of erosion, and it means that the river stays fairly clear even when it's raining heavily.
Yeah, let's move to the prettiest farm in the country.
Bella. Yeah, definitely. I joke quite frequently with people and my wife as well, is that if I had all the money in the world, I'd probably buy Bella first. And the Lotengi second.
Yeah.
Baloch is just—it's a special place. People go on about the Witte if you know, but Baloch—if you've seen Baloch, you'd want to go back there, even if you don't catch a fish. It's just one of those places in the country and in the world. It really is. You step out of South Africa into something totally different. If you show pictures to someone, they would just not believe that it's...
Well, it's called New England for a reason.
Yeah, but, I mean, it's just a magical place.
Yeah, last time
it's
we were
really
going
special
to
place.
The sheepdogs working the sheep.
Yeah.
It really does feel like a little piece of New England, that whole area.
Yeah, and Graham and Margie Frost, the owners, they're really good farmers, and you can see that in the land as well. You know, they really take care of it. Margie runs her own hatchery, so she understands the fishing. She understands fishermen as well. And she understands if she looks after the river will look after her as well.
Okay, so let's talk, because some people know and some people don't. There's a waterfall, and that is a barrier for the rainbows. Yeah. Above that waterfall, they stock browns.
Yeah. Margie did her first stocking, as far as I know. I think I'm fairly accurate on this, in 1986. She stocked above that waterfall once, so since 1986... those browns have been totally self-sustaining. Yeah, it's difficult to explain in words, but once you see pictures of the place, it's just the most magical place you can find. And what makes it even more magical is that there are wild browns in there.
Okay, so let's start below the waterfall. That piece of river, There's some deep holes in there. You've got some good fish out of those holes.
It's a very productive section, but for me, the magic of Belloch is the browns.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you go to Belloch for me. The river that flows past it is called the Floy Kral Spruit.
Yeah.
Margie and them has affectionately renamed the upper section from the waterfall above that to the Willow. It is still actually the Floy Kral Spruit. They've just gone to call it the Willow, and they've separated the two, which I think is a really good thing, because you can definitely separate these two. They are two, even though it's the same stream, and they're just separated by a little waterfall of about 20 meters high, most probably. It's vastly different streams in nature, in flow.
Well, give us a little bit of details about the Willow. Let's talk about, it's not just pocket water, there are pools, there's runs, there's a little bit of a gorge.
The thing with the Willow is that because you're fishing for browns, it's mostly not tough fishing, but you're not going to pick up a ton of fish. And if you're not a really determined fisherman, you'll only fish a section of the Willow, which I would say is not the best of the Willow. The Willow goes up for a really, really long way, and it's something that you need to fish a whole day long. Yeah, good runs, very narrow, places that you could jump across, places that you really, if you go into the pools, you'd be up over your ears in water, ankle-deep water at places. So, it's a lot of variable water that you can do all styles and types of fishing, and you'd probably pick up fish if you were really, really careful. Most of the people that I take out fishing, when I was still guiding, and now friends that I take out fishing, are really shocked by how sensitive those fish really are. You can walk on top of a ridge or a little cliff with fish 5-6 meters below you, and you 5-6 meters behind them, and they would still spook. And that's how seriously spooky those brown trout are.
And you tell a great story of the policeman that always leave at the back of the pool.
Exactly, it's typical brown. I fished with a client from Pretoria probably about 8 years ago, and he fishes the Vaal quite regularly, and he catches tons of fish. But his first day out, we fished the Willow, and it's what I usually do with clients when I still guide it, is I took them to the Willow, because that sort of breaks the whole thing down of how spooky these fish really are, and how careful you have to be, and how much you actually have to respect them. And the policeman story actually came when I fished with Trevor. And mostly browns hang out in the tail sections of pools, but on Belloch you only find small fish on the tailouts, and he aptly named them the policemen, because as soon as they spook, they just blow the whistle on everyone. And you do find the odd bigger fish in tailouts, but usually you can be fairly sure that you find a little six inch oak sitting at the back, and as soon as he spots trouble, he just blows the whistle and warns everyone in front, and then you can walk by. I mean, don't even bother making a cast.
Yeah.
You know you've banged that pool, you know you've banged that section, just walk on by and come back tomorrow.
What's the best fish you've taken out of Belloch?
Best fish on the Willow was actually below the waterfall, and it was actually on a day, it was a Sunday morning, and about 11 o'clock, me and my wife, just at that stage, we weren't married yet. We decided, let's go through for a fish together.
It's a tough day in the middle of nowhere, yeah.
Yeah, like I said, not married, so looking for an excuse to get out. And we drove through to Belloch. We had a bit of a thunderstorm on the way there, and we thought, there goes the day. Got out there, really, really good day. Got out the car, rigged the rods. Went out to the very first pool. For the people that know Belloch quite well, is if you pass over the little bridge and you park your car on the right-hand side by the trees below the Burnbrae Cottage, there's a little run on your right-hand side, a little weir, and about probably 50, 60 metres above that, there's a really nice pool. And tied on little Zach. Yeah, first cast of the day. Just had a feeling there would be a fish under a little mchichi bush. Threw my Zach in. And the line just went tight, and I thought, good start to the day. And so this fish started putting some serious bending to my rod as it started swimming up and down the pool. I thought, this is looking better and better. First time I saw the fish, I thought, this is really good fish. Yeah, after about a 3-4 minute tussle, landed the fish. Fortunately, I had a net there, still carrying the net at that stage. Since then, nets have just only brought me bad luck, so I don't carry nets anymore. Measured the fish against my rod, released him successfully, got back to the car, measured him at 54 centimeters. So yeah, I was quite pleased at that, and it was a brown trout to boot, so yeah.
This is a serious fish from that little stream.
Yeah, it's a good fish, very happy about that. And after that, I coined that as a lucky brown, because I didn't really target any browns below the waterfall. When you go above the waterfall, you target them. Above the waterfall, 47 centimeters.
That's a good fish.
Yeah.
Let's move a little further east. Let's move up to another little piece of water, which is absolutely stunning. I like it. I don't know whether I like it over Gateshead, but we'll talk about Gateshead just now. Let's talk about Boorman's.
Yeah, Boorman's another magical place. Had some bad experiences on Boorman's. We spoke about it tonight over supper. But quite a long story, which we'll maybe talk about another time. Yeah, Boorman's another one of those places where once you get down into the start of the beat, you would not think that you're in South Africa anymore. Yeah, just one of those places where you are totally, totally, totally out of reach of everything. When you're in Boorman's, you know that you're there to fish and that you're alone. It's just you in the water. It's just you in the river.
Hmm.
Part of the Upper Bell, for the people that don't know, it's the third last beat as you go upstream. Above Boorman's, you'll get Ben Laws, and then the last beat there is now Tina Head, which is also fishable again. But yeah, Boorman's rainbow trout, probably the strongest rainbows you'll catch. Wild rainbows, absolutely awesome. Free rising fish, so if you love dry fly fishing, light rods, light tippets, Boorman's is the place you need to go.
Be aware, you're going to get busted.
Oh yeah, you can, like I said, some probably the strongest rainbows that you're going to hook up to. And I think people have a misconception that small fish, you need to get your light tackle out because small fish, light tackle, you need to feel them. But I can guarantee you, on a three-weight rod, a 14-inch fish, which is definitely not uncommon in Boorman's, is going to give you a serious rev. Some people and some seriously good fishermen that I've been fishing with over the last couple of years have all walked out of Boorman's with huge smiles on their faces. And I'm talking about guys that have caught big fish and they walked out there and go like, well, I can't believe that fish of that size revved me so much, and they're grinning from ear to ear all the way back to Rose. So, Boorman's is a magical place, special piece of water. Also, small stream, jump across most of it, fish small pockets. There are huge pools, but, most of the time you fish a huge pool for 2-3 minutes and you walk onto the faster pocket water.
It's true.
Magical place.
Let's go a little bit south to what I fondly refer as to the Honeymoon Hacy Beat.
Oh yeah, Honeymoon Hacy, Barsi's old.
Just before we get into that, if you ever get to Gateshead, which is the Honeymoon Hacy, behind it are a few peach and pear and apple trees, and the fruits are so small because they're about 100 years old now,
yeah.
But it is the sweetest and most succulent fruit you will ever eat in your entire life.
Yeah, I think once again, when you get to the Rhodes area, it's not only about the fishing. As I've mentioned in Boorman's, you're so in tune with everything around you, you have to be, because there is nothing else.
Mm.
There really is nothing else. And the same when you get to Gateshead, on your way there, the farther you drive, you just get totally taken up by the scenery. And when you get to this little white house on your right-hand side as you drive up, it's just breathtaking. Yeah, as you say, probably the sweetest fruit you'll ever find.
Just on that, I have to say that we fished Lupela one day, and we had a pair of black eagles hunting behind us as we flushed the dassies. And then a lamachaya dropped in, and lamachaya is a beautiful, beautiful bird. For those of you that don't know, that's the bearded vulture.
Mm-hmm.
And that we had the pair of black eagles, we had the lamachaya drop in right onto the river and almost touching the water as it went up along the river, just checking us out. And then 3 or 4, maybe 5 days later, we fished Gateshead, and there were black eagles again, and just a magical weekend. And I often say it's not about the fish.
Yeah.
It's about the fishing.
Definitely. Yes. I took a group out there. I'm not going to name any names, but you'll know they travelled in three vehicles, one with fishermen and two with supplies, just for a day's worth of fishing. Those of you that have fished with them will know who I'm referring to. Yeah, as we stopped and tackled up and took out the lobster and stuff like that for our afternoon snack, much as you say, we looked up and there were two jackal buzzards, and they were circling, and there was a black eagle. And one of these jackal buzzards had something in its claws, and this black eagle was just chasing them down. And you could see these two jackal buzzards were working together. For 5 minutes, we just stood there gaping at this fight that was going on between these two jackal buzzards and the black eagle. And yeah, it was just amazing to see, and they eventually disappeared behind the mountain on the left-hand side. And once again, just that magical thing of leaving you wondering what the outcome of the fight was. So as you fish throughout the day, you are either hoping the black eagle got what he was looking for, or the jackal buzzards got away with what they had. So yeah, it's
okay. So speaking of fish, basically get back to the fishing. That is a serious piece of water, but you have to put in a bit of water to get the really good stuff.
Yeah, look, there's serious good fishing from the little house honeymoon Hasty, as you fondly refer to it. But yeah, you have to put in some hard miles. I won't say the fishing is bad before that, but once you've experienced the fishing from the waterfall, you know, I just can't think you can compare the two. And once again, it's much like the willow, where you've got vastly two, you can almost separate the water from the waterfall downstream and from the waterfall upstream.
Mm.
Although it's the same river, same flow, there's a definite separation between the two.
Yeah.
And it's magical water, a lot of pocket water where you fish with a meter or a fly line. And in some cases, even 10 meters of fly line isn't enough to not spook those fish. So yes, sometimes extremely great fishing, come back with 60 plus fish a day. And sometimes you really have to sweat and bleed for two fish. When you get those two fish, you know you did good. Did good.
One of the few pieces of water in that part of the world where I can honestly say I've taken over 20 fish in a day and not one had power markings on it.
Yeah.
Beautiful piece of river, and the fish are always in such good nick.
And very similar to Borman's as well. Small fish, but exceptionally strong.
Oh. Okay, well, we've kind of promoted the three beats that everybody really wants to get to. Let's talk about some other beats in the area, because there are some stunning beats. And I know the previous podcast that I did with Tony, we spoke about it, but Tony gave us a nice introduction to the area. On the middle bell, we like to call it the middle bell, from Lower Hamilton down, give us a couple of nice beats.
Yeah, once again, from guiding and taking people out, people want to go to the popular beats.
Mm.
And when you take people out, you want to try and give them what they want. But if you sort of go on your own, there's a lot of good beats. Just above roads, you'd find Fargate, which is
great
a really fantastic beat. Once again, a beautiful combination of small pockets, big wide pools, nice glides, nice runs and riffles, you know, so a really wide selection for the type of fisherman that would want to fish everything, you know, some fast water, some slow water. It's a really good beat, and good fish as well. I've seen fish come out there that's been close to 20 inches.
I have my best fish from pockets.
Yeah, it's, you know, close to roads. It's probably about 10-15 minutes drive from roads, and people overlook it quite frequently, because like you just mentioned, you read in the magazines about Baloch, Gateshead, Foreman's Chase, beautiful pieces of water, because the scenery is so good, they make for beautiful photographs and make for beautiful writing. But when you get down to pure fishing...
Yeah, so let's move up a little bit from Parker to Malpas. I mean, that is some really good water there.
Exactly. Malpas.
In fact, I rate Malpas as one of the best fishing beats in the area.
For a very long time, Tony Kitzman actually used to fish Malpas as the first choice when he fished Rhodes.
Mm.
For those of you that don't know, he moved to Rhodes quite recently. But when Tony still stayed in Joburg, whenever he got to Rhodes, Malpas was on his to-do list. And it was really, if it wasn't number one, it was number two. Malpas, unfortunately, is one of those beats that no one knows about. It's accessible. It's part of the wild trout system. Yeah, it's just one of those less glamorous beats, for some other reason.
but it always holds good fish. And there's a section that runs through that sandstone for about 700-800 meters. And it's pure bedrock.
Yeah.
And it's just drop after drop after drop after drop. And it's just... And each drop is about 10 meters long, and it's just fish after fish. And
ironically as well, probably the best conditioned fish on the bell. You catch fish on Bormans, which are really long and thin.
They're malpas, and they fight you hard.
And they're proper fish. They're little footballs. Yeah. And once again, it just shows you the nature of the river can change within a few hundred meters, where further lower down, where you get Merton, where the Klopperhoek runs into the bell. Totally different river, totally different fish. Totally different fish behavior.
Mm.
And malpas definitely something to fish. Just be on the lookout for Buffy there.
Yeah, I agree. That particular beat in that
is once again, one of those weird things.
But if you keep your eyes open and you're looking after yourself, Buffies and the Runkles take care of themselves.
Oh yeah, they'll get away. They'll get away from you.
Let's jump over the mountain now and let's go onto the lower book, the middle section of the book.
Lower section of the book, most people would probably start fishing at Valgemut.
Mm-hmm.
That's the closest accessible beat, very easy to get into. Park your vehicle right next to the beat, right next to the river, and start fishing that.
Again, a great beat. Again, my best fish from the box bait has come out of Valgemut.
Ironically, my best fish on the box bait has just come two beats above that on a beat called Knock Warren, which I used to fish.
Gorgeous beat.
As first choice when I got to Rhodes, that would be the place I used to fish. I'm owned by a chap by the name of Cyril Steenkamp at that stage. And, I just phoned him up and asked if I could fish it. And my best rainbow from Knock Warren was also 51 centimeters, which, as you know from having fished it, is a monumental fish from that section. Because there's really a lot of small fish. Getting a fish like that's amazing.
There's two things I just want to quickly touch on. Most of the guys have been hearing us call them by names, and all these names are very Scottish.
Yeah.
And then we talk about the farmers very Afrikaans now. Highly contradictory, but tell us the story about the...
Well, the initial land surveyor was from Scotland. So when they came to measure all the farms, they put Scottish names to it. Some of the Afrikaans names that you would now find are farms that have been divided up as fathers passed it on to their sons. And obviously the father still stayed on the property and just divided up the farm in two and go in an Afrikaans name. So the Afrikaans names that you'd find in the area are farms that have been divided up after the initial naming.
Lekkerblay is the best one.
Lekkerblay. Well, for the people that have been in Rhodes recently or on the way to Rhodes, read the signboard next to the road. You'll find it quite amusing what the owner wrote about whoever stays there now.
Now, there are two other streams before we go and talk about the Cry, which is a different kettle of fish altogether, but let's talk about the Stagsbreit and then the Langkloof.
In my mind, they're the two bigger rivers, so veering away from small streams, but other people would still see them as tiny little streams compared to the Vol and some of the places they fish. Yeah, but bigger rivers, probably stepping up to bigger rods and bigger fish. Also, you'd predominantly find a great spread of smallmouth yellows in those places. Still a lot of rainbow, obviously. Martin Davies will testify to being able to pull really, really big fish from the Stagsbreit.
You've mentioned something there that a lot of guys in Joburg would be listening to. You said yellows. Now, that moves me into the Cry, because if we move into the Cry, there are some awesome yellowfish in the Cry. And a lot of guys are now overlooking that because they're on their way to Rhodes. We can go fish Gateshead and we can run up and fish all these rainbow streams. Just be aware that, I don't want to say from the confluence of the Stack and...
But that's a very good starting point. You do get good populations of yellows up to the middle Boksprit, as far up to a beat as Klontoff, which is quite high up to the Boksprit. I've personally seen pods of yellows going up to 30, 40 yellowfish of good size in the Boksprit. So, yes, they are there. But, using the confluence where the Bell and the Stagsbreit join to form the Cry, is a good starting point if you want to target yellows. Mm. If moving down.
I mean, right. Basically, from the start of the cry down.
Yeah.
And we can talk about that. The yellowfish that we ran into, and Lacablay is one of the places where you find good yellows.
Yeah, well, Lacablay is one of those beats also that lend itself well to yellowfish. Big water, you know, where yellowfish can really move in big pods and hunt in packs. People will know that. Not a great yellowfish lover, but awesome fishing if you really want to target yellows.
Yeah, let me set the scene on that. Other than plonking in the Vaal, we're fishing a crystal clear stream, and you're sight fishing to fish up between 2 and 3.5, 4 kilo females.
Oh yeah, this is real fishing. This is not only, you know, casting a heavy nymph in a fast flowing rapid. This is selecting a fish, casting to a fish, making a cast of 20 meters, because anything closer to that, you will spook the entire pod, and that's it.
You won't see them again all day. They're gone.
Game over. Come back tomorrow.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's technical fishing in the sense of approach, and yeah, you probably have one cast only, like most other streams in the area. The only difference is, as you say, you cast into seriously big fish.
These are fish that will pull you hard.
And
they're fast. They're hard fighting fish. You know, I say that the Vaal River fish are strong, but these things are really strong.
I think the main difference is our fish are a lot leaner. And they're a lot stronger because I think they've adapted to living in colder water where they've got more oxygen. And the Vaal fishing only starts from about 60 degrees upwards, I've heard. 60 degrees upwards in Rose is boiling water.
Sure, the water's way over temperature.
So, yeah, if you're fishing in 10 degree water and you hook a yellowfish, trust me, he's going to give you revs.
Okay, I know from looking at the stats in the back end that I have some international guys downloading podcasts. So let me just touch on this for a second. In Southern Africa, we have a few indigenous species which are exceptionally powerful. Now, we touched on yellowfish in previous podcasts, etc. There is a rating in South Africa that we say a tigerfish is the king of all fish. He's got immense speed, and he will take off and he will rev you solid for a minute and a half, 2 minutes.
And that's it.
Then he lies on the surface and you reel him back to the boat, and that's a tigerfish. Yes, that minute to a minute, 2 minutes and a half. Serious fun, and if you manage to keep them hooked for that long, you've done well. Let me explain about a yellowfish. A yellowfish will fight 2/3 as hard as a tigerfish for his first 2 minutes, but a yellowfish will fight you hard for another 5 to 8 minutes after that. And if you've got a big fish of over 3.5 kilos, you're going to fight him for 10-15 minutes.
Oh, no, definitely. Especially once again in the lower beats where they've got room to run.
Oh, you will see backing.
Definitely. Up in the box break, they don't really have that much room to run. They'll still keep you going for 10 minutes because you won't get him any closer.
Yeah.
But he'll just go up and down in that 10-meter pool where he can go up and down. But you're not going to get him any closer. About a month ago, I had someone up from Joburg fishing the stage grade. Yeah, we were fishing one-way rods because the water was really, really low. You needed a 6-7x tippet to get fish interested. And once again, he was casting to fish yellowfish, probably of around... We tend to measure our fish in size, in length.
Yep.
Because really mass for us is not really an indicator of a good fish, because most of our fish are lean.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have the food resources that you've got on the Vaal, where you've got immense aquatic food life. Yeah, we are casting our fish 50 centimeters plus. Now, that's a big fish.
That's a 2.5 kilo fish, if not more.
That's a big fish.
And I use 2.5 kilos because in on the Vaal fishermen,
the
guys talk like that.
Yeah.
I got a 2 kilo fish or 1 kilo. And for any international guys, that's 2.2 pounds to the kilo. So 2 kilo fish, you're looking at 5-8 pound fish.
Yeah.
Anywhere in that range is a really good fish.
And we're talking about strong fish.
Now, we're talking 22, 24, 26 inch rainbows. And these things yellows.
Yeah, yellow
and
fish.
They pull good.
Yeah. Like I said, we had to fish one-way rods. Anything above that on 6X tippet, you're not going to stand a chance if you hook it. So why bother casting to a fish that's going to break you off?
But what's really nice about that section of water is that you're not just fishing for the yellows.
No, you're not. Exactly, yeah. That's, once again, one of the things that at the day's end, where this person had such a huge smile on his face, you could stand in the same spot, make a cast with exactly the same fly, and not know what you're going to hook. Makes me chuckle a bit about guys now defining yellowfish flies and crowd flies. Yeah, I always thought they ate the same stuff that's in the water. But anyway, that's just me.
Just not get technical, but if it's a mayfly nymph or it's a caddis nymph, it's immaterial. They're going to look the same. And that's why Zach is just the ultimate fly in that part of the world. Time has moved really quickly on this, but let's talk about some fly.
Yeah, you've mentioned it, Zach. If you come to Rose, you
bring
probably Zach. Need to bring three different flies, and that's a size 14, a size 16, a size 18, Zach. So, yeah, those are probably the three nymphs you'll need. And dry flies, you're looking at Parachute Adams and a Rab. If you can tie a proper Rab, you don't really need to bring anything else.
I will add to that I find stimulators, but small size stimulators, 14s and 16s, exceptionally effective. However, I don't take them out of the box that often. I find that the fish swallow them really deeply. They take them with a lot of gusto. And I would say that one out of five fish I've got to kill to get my fly back.
Well, I've been experimenting a little bit with a variation on the stimulator where I drop the ribbing of normal hackle and tie it with CDC. The reason why I think stimulators work so well is it can imitate so many different food sources, terrestrials blowing into the water, and as you say, in smaller sizes, a lot of caddis. We don't have huge hatches in roads.
I think that's why they eat it, because there are not a lot of caddis. But there is something in that part of the world which, for guys who haven't seen them before, is quite stunning. I've been in two hatches of stonefly, one on the upper bok and one on Lupella, and that is just something spectacular.
Stoneflies, I don't think anyone in South Africa really ties and fishes stoneflies a lot because they don't have the opportunity because of water quality. If you actually go and look under the rocks, especially in the upper streams, you would really be surprised at the number of golden and brown stoneflies you would find. Even a really general pattern, you don't really have to get it ultra realistic, will put you into a lot of fish, and especially fish on the upper stream, it's where you would get thousands of smaller fish and then one real lunker. And that fish would be very selective, and that could be the pattern that put that fish on the end of your line.
Completely agree with you. You know, the little fish will take those zacks time after time after time. But the big fish, and we do it, body mass versus amount of food that you're going to take. If you have to move a bit further to get that nice, big, fat, juicy stonefly, you're going to do it.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Like I say, stoneflies indicate stream quality. And
good fish will eat stoneflies.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Most definitely.
Two more things just to touch on it. I always say to guys when you go to the mountains, you're going to get four seasons in one day. I have been snowed on after it being 22 degrees at lunchtime. It snowed on us in the afternoon. So what are you going to take with you?
Well, first of all, people make a big mistake of taking really, really thick jackets. Try to get as many layers as possible on your body. So that means carry two or three lighter garments like polar fleece and then a weatherproof jacket or waterproof jacket. People carry these thick bomber jackets and they struggle to carry them out the mountain because when you go out to Gateshead, when you go out to Bormans, you're going to walk.
Right. Quick fire favourites. Favourite dry fly?
In the past couple of seasons after Neil Rowe introduced it to me, it'll have to be a Rab. But it has to be a properly tied Rab. It has to be a Rab that looks like a big Rab.
Favourite nymph?
Zach.
Favourite species?
Oh, well, that's no-brainer. Browns. Wild browns.
Favourite rod?
Jibius Sage Double Knot TXL.
Favorite gadget or gizmo?
Airflow, indicator putty. I don't like the loon stuff.
favorite author, movie, book?
I'd probably have to say Tom Sutcliffe. I know there's a lot of really, really great authors out there. But Tom's...
I suppose he's writing about your home water half the time.
Yeah, you know, he's probably a little bit biased. But having met him and having spoken to him quite a few times, you can really see that when he's writing, he's conversing with you. He's telling a story.
All expenses paid anywhere in the world?
I'd probably have to say some really, really tiny stream with wild browns in Germany.
Yeah.
Throw them of browns.
Okay, well, thank you so much for your time, Mario. I know that you put up a fight to go on the podcast today, but I really appreciate all the time and effort, etc.
Thanks a lot, Mike, and really enjoyed it.
They say, you know, life is given, but I tell you now, it's all within that river. You find yourself in the heart of heaven. Close off so long, you could swim forever. One place to rest your grace, a silver sands lead the way. The water's golden, stories told, free clouds, sapphire summer days. One way to spend your day, take yourself deep right away. Drive 6 hours and walk 5 days. Hey, hey, hey.